From Providence, Rhode Island, in the Minute with Mary studio, welcome to the Potterverse. It's a podcast dedicated to the book and film universe of Harry Potter. So grab your favorite wands and time turners. Let's step into the night and pursue that flighty temptress adventure. Hello, everyone, and welcome back. My name is Mary Larson.
My name is Blake, and I genuinely really like Ginny in this chapter. She suffers no fools.
Yep.
And I love that. The fact that she's able to call Harry out the way that she does and just makes no qualms about it, even though she's younger. You know, all this stuff's happening around her, and she's still like, yeah, let's calm down here a little bit, Harry. Why don't we stop making it about you? Okay. I really like that. Book Ginny
kicks,
is something.
Kicks movie Ginny's bootay.
Oh yeah.
Okay? It's just a known fact.
Why do you, before we get into this whole chapter,
okay,
why do you think, honestly, Book Ginny is just so much better than movie Ginny? Like, I don't think it's Bonnie Wright's fault.
No, I agree.
I know some people, you know, kind of use her as a scapegoat. I don't see it, but I would love to know your thoughts, Mary.
I think it comes down to the director. They were able to get a lot of great emotions out of young actors.
Mm-hmm.
And they just felt that Ginny's story needed to be different. And who she was, in my opinion, always the little sister, instead of in this book, she's a 14-year-old young lady who is finding herself,
sure,
snogging left and right. Right? Let her be, and let her be her cool person and amazing, confident woman that she's becoming at 14 years old and beyond.
Yeah, and it's funny that you say the director, Mary, because this is the first movie in which Ginny really starts to have like a character.
Yeah, instead of, have you seen my jumper?
Yeah, or like, you know, laying down on the Chamber of Secrets. You know, like, she actually has something.
Mm-hmm.
And there is, I think, I think there is something to the director idea, Mary, because it's this movie that David Yates starts taking over all of Harry Potter. I mean, from this movie all the way through Magical Beasts, all of it. So it might be fair to say that.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that it is, but it might be fair.
That's where I'm going. his team just didn't. They just got Ginny wrong. And maybe it's because they knew Bonnie Wright. And maybe they wrote Ginny in the movies to match Bonnie Wright's character.
Fair.
Rather than challenging Bonnie and working with Bonnie to be more of the Ginny that we know and love from the books.
Amy here on Facebook, that she's watching us live, she says, because Steve Kloves loves Hermione so much and another kick-butt female would take away from Hermione.
Hey, that's fair.
I think that's fair, too. Like, there's only so much room for one alpha when it comes to... Mm-hmm. When it comes to the chemistry, if you will, of the films,
mm-hmm.
I think Luna has a great characterization, but she's not the alpha. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get it.
So, okay, fair enough. I want to have that conversation and see, you know, what that looks like.
I think the whole team probably saw Bonnie Wright grow up, mm-hmm, and couldn't write her and direct her in a different way.
Fair. It almost kind of reminds me of Arya Stark. Ooh. In Game of Thrones. I mean, they did write her one way in the show. They did write her one way. And I will definitely say that it was weird to see her acting in an adult manner, if mm-hmm. If you know what I mean, Mary.
Yes.
Because, you know, you essentially watched her grow up in Game of Thrones, like quite literally. But good. Interesting factoids or interesting takes, Mary. I appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Marvin, you ready to get into the show? You got anything else you want to talk about before we get ready?
Uh, No, that's it.
No? Okay.
But isn't it, aren't I supposed to introduce the title of the chapter?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I wanted to make sure we got it all off of our chest.
Yeah, okay. Before. So we are at chapter 23, Christmas on the Closed Ward in Order of the Phoenix. And I'm going to lean into that quote that you brought up. Well, it's a bit stupid of you, said Ginny angrily, seeing as how you don't know anyone but me who's been possessed by you-know-who, and I could tell you how it feels. Harry remained quite still as the impact of these words hit him. Then he wheeled around. I forgot, he said. Lucky you, said Ginny coolly. I'm sorry, Harry said, and he meant it. So do you think I'm being possessed then? And then they go on. But Ginny, angrily and then coolly, lucky you.
Do you stand by Ginny in this
yes.
in this instance?
100% stand
yeah.
by Ginny.
Oh yeah, I kind of agree with you.
Rightly so. All right. So you ready to get into the show?
Harry kind of earned that one.
He sure did.
All right, let's get into the show.
I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good.
So in this chapter, a little mini recap, if you haven't read this chapter recently, this is the chapter, can I say chapter one more time? Why not?
How right? many more?
Let's do it.
How many more times can you say
this
chapter?
This is the chapter in which Harry woe is me Potter, is upset, trying to figure things out, trying to avoid everybody. Maybe I'm the problem. It's me. Hi, I'm the problem. It's me. I must be the weapon because it's all about me. That's Harry in this chapter, okay? Then when he figures out it's not just you, there's a whole wide world out there. Thank you, Ginny. He goes and has Christmas at Grimwald Place, and then they go to St. Mungo's and have Christmas on the Closed Ward. They bump into your boy, Gilderoy Lockhart, as
touch.
Well as Neville Longbottom, his grandmother.
I should have worn my Lockhart shirt today.
Mom. It's all good.
Oh, that was not a smart
choice.
I
think Mars is in retrograde, though, so Mars is bright tonight might be working.
Sure, why not? I feel like Mars has been in retrograde for like
I don't know, but people like were saying it's the day that we're recording this, people were saying, oh, there's a lot of stuff going on, so. There you go, Blake.
All right, fair enough. That is the recap, Mary. Yeah. And so... Where
I think
do you want
just
to start?
Going I'm... chronological order as this happens immediately after the kids rip the ears.
Yes.
You know? Oh, Harry was possessed.
Right.
So here he is. He hears this. Everyone's jaw drops and he is upset, runs upstairs, and he feels dirty, contaminated, as though he were carrying some deadly germ, unworthy to sit on the underground train back from the hospital with the innocent, clean people whose minds and bodies were free from the taint of Voldemort. I love Harry's thought process during all of this. There's
yeah.
even a point where he thinks about Quirrell back to book one.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh my gosh, I knew someone who had Voldemort in his head, but he was on his head, not just in his head, on his head. And Harry actually goes and touches the
not
back.
Not great,
of his
Bob.
Head.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine that feeling being like, wait a second.
Wait, hold on. Let me check. Do I got.
Oh my God.
Is there a nose there?
This happened before.
Time is a flat circle.
And he's just having all of these things running through his head without someone to talk it through with
yeah.
until Trio and Ginny come on up and show him what's up. But nobody else really does understand this to his, aside from Ginny.
Yeah.
He thinks like maybe Quirrell would have known this feeling.
Sure, sure.
And then he starts to think, is he an animagus? Is Voldemort able to shapeshift? And if so, could Voldemort possess him and make him into a snake? Like the thought process this 15-year-old goes through.
It's wild. Mm-hmm. The questioning of even your own existence, the truths upon which you have based your entire life, the very core tenets of your being are being called into question. And again, Mary, it kind of leans into that conversation of where does Harry begin and where does Voldemort end or vice versa. It's natural, I think, to have that conversation, especially in this book.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we do know that Harry is Harry, Voldemort is Voldemort. Voldemort isn't necessarily possessing him, but there's something
there's
there.
Massive connection, exactly.
And how much influence does that connection have over Harry in all of his interactions?
Well, no one is talking this through with him.
Right.
Okay. This is massive. And he's putting pieces of a puzzle together by himself. And what he has heard is that Voldemort needs a weapon. A weapon that he doesn't have. And Harry begins to realize, I'm the weapon. Once again, it's me. Hi, I'm the problem. It's me.
Yeah, right.
I'm the weapon. I'm constantly around the Order of the Phoenix. Voldemort could just be listening to my thoughts right now. What I have to do is leave. I need to protect everybody. I could turn into a bippity-boppity-boo snake at any moment and bite someone else. Mm-hmm. And if nothing else, he's going to hear, potentially, everything that I am listening to.
Sure.
All the people that I care about. So Harry decides to somewhat selflessly get ready to leave Grimwald Place.
Right. And again, how could you not? How could you not want to leave? And this is, I think, pretty prescriptive of Harry throughout the entire series, where it's like, no, no, I'm going to leave. I'm not going to stick around. No one else is going to die for me, or I can't be around it. Like, imagine that isolation that you must feel. I know, Mary, we've talked in the past, especially in book three, when Harry's sitting at the bench and he's just kind of waiting for the night bus. He's alone. No one's there. And then eventually, of course, he runs into Sirius unknowingly. And at that time, we said this was...
He's not waiting for the night bus. He's just...
Yeah, he's just waiting. He's, like, sorry.
He's running away, but yeah. Yes.
He's just... He doesn't know what to do, so he's sitting down. At that time, Mary, you and I had a great conversation of, is this the lowest that Harry is? And is it the lowest that he has been up until that point? And you and I think we, from what I remember, we concluded that, yes, that was the lowest that he had been. But I got to tell you, the way that the author describes his feeling right now, especially that being unclean and dirty and feeling like he has to isolate himself because he doesn't feel safe, this feels like it kind of surpasses the loneliness and the emptiness of just sitting down and then all of a sudden the night bus appearing. What do you think?
I don't know. That's a good... The way that I read it is I just want to grab Harry by the shoulders and be like, come on, man, learn how to communicate. Because it's not... He's viewing everything through his own eyes, and he's not realizing that there are people that care about him. But he's seeing it as, oh, they don't want to come up and potentially get bit by me. When really, maybe they're just trying to let him sleep. You know, they probably do want to talk things through with him. They obviously brought him to their house. They're not that afraid of him. So I think he's just... unaware. I don't know. Personally, I don't know if he's at a level of sadness. I think, of course, it's going to come later on in the book. This one I would see more as angry and afraid. We're working out of a place of fear.
Yeah. And, well, I wouldn't say sadness. When I say low point, I mean like this is Harry at his most.
Because when I think low, I think sad, depressed, and unable to do action. And to me, this is coming more from a place of fear where there is action. It's not well thought out action. And thank goodness.
Well, low point
gracious,
can be scared. Yeah. Scared, you know, like, sorry, yeah. Being scared as well, right? So, like, think of like the Blair Witch Project, right? Like when the girl's sitting there and she's got the cell phone looking up at her nose and it's all, she's crying. I'm so sorry. That's her low point as she's running through the woods and about to find her buddies in the little shed. Mm-hmm. That's the low point. That's not about being sad or being depressed. That's, I am terrified and I am alone right now. So I guess like I'm kind of going along those lines.
I guess to me, it's like I almost am numbed to Harry's low points because he's had so many. I know he's going to have so many more. And like you said, Blake, that there's times where he does kind of take on this whole sacrificial, I need to go so that nobody else pays this price. So it's hard for me to say, but I could appreciate if that's how you feel, that this, as of at this moment, you feel like this may be his lowest point from here and previously. What I got to tell you, though, is... To me, it's so quick that I almost don't feel like there could have been a low yet. That's just so frantic and figuring things out. But thank goodness for Phineas Nigelis.
Yeah.
Which, let's be real. No one would ever think that we'd be saying that.
No,
thank you, Phineas Nigelis. But PNB, Phineas Dejellis Black.
Yeah. PNB.
He speaks the truth in the most snobby of ways that you question yourself if this guy potentially is related to Snape.
Sure. Exactly.
No. Like all people, you are quite sure that you feel, you alone feel and think. You alone recognize danger. You alone are the only one clever enough to realize what the Dark Lord may be planning. Flippin' love it. I just love it.
You know what? And he's not wrong. Hashtag not wrong.
No.
You know? And it's great. Again, Harry gets put back in his place here a little bit. And gets made fun of it just a tad.
Oh, the dig that he does about Gryffindor. I thought, to belong in Gryffindor House, you were supposed to be brave. It looks to me as though you would have been better off in my own house. We Slytherins are brave, yes, but not stupid. For instance, given the choice, we will always choose to save our own necks. I read that and I was like, Blake Larson. There he is.
Yep.
There he is.
Makes me want to shout. Oh, yeah, baby.
Phineas Nigellis.
Yeah, we're brave, but we ain't stupid.
Yeah. There he is, Phineas, being like, look at this little Potter.
Yeah.
He's going to save his neck.
Oh, yeah, you're the chosen one.
He should have been in Slytherin.
Yeah, right.
Look at him being slippery. Phineas was like pumped for a moment.
Yep.
Everyone talks about you being Gryffindor. I know. I know. And Harry says, no. I'm not. I'm saving everybody. And that's when Phineas goes, oh, this is no cowardly fight. Mm-hmm. Flight. You are being noble. Well, by the way, I've got news. And he pulls like an April Fool's Day prank on Harry. Mm-hmm. And Harry's like, well, what's the news from Dumbledore? Harry's so excited. This is what Harry needs. Harry needs what? Did I just say he needs, Blake? Communication.
Yes. Someone to talk to.
Okay.
Or someone to talk to him.
Phineas knows this. Phineas, you could see him in his portrait drumming his little fingers or having his arms interlocked, his hands interlocked, spinning his thumbs with the biggest Cheshire cat smile. What's the message? Stay where you are. I haven't moved, said Harry, his hands still open on the doorknob. So what's the message? I have just given it to you, dolt, said Phineas Nigellis smoothly. Dumbledore says, stay where you are. Why? Said Harry eagerly, dropping the end of his trunk. Why does he want me to stay? What else did he say? Nothing whatsoever.
I might as well just say Mary instead of Harry.
Yeah. Nothing. Just stay where you are.
I haven't moved. What are you talking about, Blake? Yep.
And then he's like, this is why I hate teaching. I actually hate young people. Oh, you're convinced that you're right about everything. Has it not occurred to you, my poor, puffed up popinjay, that there might be an excellent reason why the headmaster of Hogwarts is not confining every tiny detail. Like, I, reading this book the first several times, mm-hmm. I did not love Phineas. You can't. He's a jerk. He's actually the headmaster in Hogwarts Legacy.
Yes.
He's a jerk in the Snape-ish of ways. Reading it now, as someone who has taught middle school students who... Friends who are in that age, you might know this because of yourself or peers and those of you who've had children or those of you who have been around. It's a very interesting age. So Harry's still kind of in that cusp of that age mm-hmm. where developmentally they are selfish in a way that they can't kind of see past themselves. The world in the way that their brain is constructed at that age, the world kind of does revolve around them. Mm-hmm. And it takes work and effort and communication and learning to be able to see things through other people's perspectives, to be able to have that moment to stand back. Because when you're little, you're seeing it through your parents' eyes or the teacher's eyes. Like, okay, they're right. And then when you get a bit older, hopefully, you know, later high school years, adult years, hopefully you're able to take a step back and say, okay, these are my opinions. These are my feelings.
Yep.
This is everybody else. But in this lovely preteen, early teen age, developmentally, while you're going through hormones, while your body grows overnight and you just bump into tables and chairs because you're like, where did that extra foot come from? While you get hairy and smelly and everything.
So smelly.
It is so hard to take a step back and see things from other people's perspectives.
Yeah, to see anything other than you. It's hard.
And so for Phineas to say this,
yeah.
reading it now, 42-year-old Mary. Yeah.
And you know what? Here's the one that I love, Mary, and I'm so glad that you wanted to get into this, because like I wanted to talk about all of this, but I was okay to not.
Okay.
But I'm so glad that you did, because Harry says, he is planning something to do with me then, said Harry swiftly. Did I say that? Said Phidias Nigellus, idly examining his silk gloves. Like, picture this, a guy just sitting there looking at his gloves going, did I say that?
Yeah.
Like, not even looking at you. Now, if you will excuse me, I have better things to do than listen to adolescent agonizing.
Adolescent agonizing.
Good day to you.
His alliteration.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My poor puffed up popping Jay, I don't want to listen to this adolescent, what is it?
Agonizing.
Phidias Nigellus has been sitting in his portrait for decades.
Just waiting for this moment.
Waiting for zingers that he can say. And he's just dumped them all.
Because
you know
he sat there. He's like, I wish I could have said this to these kids. I wish I could have done this. I wish I could have done that.
You know, it would be fun if I said to someone, my poor puffed up popping Jay. That would get him.
It's the alliteration that does it.
Yeah. And here he is. He just drops all of them on Harry. And what, Blake, you feel like is Harry's lowest moment of his life so far.
Well, it kind of is.
No, I know. And so that's what I'm just saying. Phineas is just pouring it on.
You know, and the great thing too, Mary, is, you know, we have, I think, talked extensively about how this is a kid's book, but also at the same time, it is more than just a kid's book. Yet, the author does a phenomenal job of translating these experiences and these emotions into a rubric or some kind of language that kids can understand, right? Kids can understand the idea of feeling dirty and unclean. Now, they may not know the context, especially in the way that we adults have an understanding of what she means. But kids can get this feeling like, oh, I feel dirty. Like, I feel this ain't right. Mm-hmm. Like, I got to get this off of me. Like, not great. And then I think kids can understand, too, of just getting the business from an adult and being like, you're not important. I'm moving on. I got way better things to deal with. Those are very raw, emotional experiences that work, I think, on multiple levels for the intended audience as they're reading it. You even yourself said it, Mary. When you were younger, you didn't get it and you hated the guy. But as you get older, you're like, wait, you know what? I kind of get it now. That's why this works.
Say it to
anyone. No, but you kind of get it.
Yes.
I don't think you would use the alliteration, though.
Poor puffed up popping Jay. I might. That's lovely. Poor puffed up popping Jay.
Yeah. But luckily though, Harry does have Ginny to put him in his place and to get his mind
right.
Well,
first it's Christmas decorating, okay? And I know that Harry's not excited as much. He's thinking he should have sometimes been back at Privet Drive. But he has never seen Sirius so happy. Sirius is singing Christmas carols. They're decorating. It's just magical, of course. And he does ignore everybody. But I'm just saying, if you have to be stuck in a grumpy mood, it's not bad at Christmas time. Could be worse.
Well, you know, and Mary, there's something here that's also true. And I really like this entry here. Harry, said Ron's voice from far, far away. Mum says dinner's ready, but she'll save you something if you want to stay in bed. Harry opened his eyes, but Ron had already left the room. He doesn't want to be on his own with him, Harry thought. Not after what he heard Moody say. He supposed none of them were there anymore, now that they knew what was inside him. You know, Mary, I think we've all been at this place, and I know that I have, where your brain tells you something, and you have convinced yourself that is the absolute truth.
Because Ron could have honestly been thinking Harry was asleep.
Sure.
And said it just quietly enough. Hey, Harry, if you're awake, you can come and eat. If not, no worries. She'll save you something. Mm-hmm. But like, you know, when someone's napping and you're like, I want to still acknowledge because maybe they're awake.
Sure.
So I'll say something quietly. It's not like Harry says anything in response to Ron. Mm-hmm. So from a Ron person, that would be me. I'd be like, yeah, he's really crabby.
Yeah.
I'm just going to whisper it. Mm-hmm.
And if he hears it, great.
Because the last thing you want is a crabby woken up from a nap Harry Potter
Now. That's all. Okay? Caps
Ron
lock
knows.
Harry.
Ron knows Ron, caps lock Harry.
He does not want caps lock Harry.
Yes.
Yeah, I have certainly been there where it's like,
no.
You know, you tell. And it's a weird thing. And for our younger listeners, as you get older, there are things that feel like are conspiring against you. Not once or twice or every other day, every single day. It feels like there are things.
Blake still struggles with this.
Yeah.
I love how you're like younger listeners. There are people who struggle with this their whole life.
No, but I mean like for those who like maybe are feeling it but don't know what it how to categorize it or what to make of it. There are things that you feel like conspire against you all the time. And what Harry needs to know at this point is something that I've been told, and I think rings true for everybody. That is, you are not your thoughts. Mm-hmm. Harry is not what he thinks he is. The problem is, you're right, Mary. Number one, he's not communicating it, but he's also scared to communicate it. And perhaps he's scared of himself so much that he doesn't even want to communicate it. Is that fair?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
You know, you can. I remember there was a time when I was in college. I was at the cafeteria, and my best friend, like who has been my best friend since the first day of college, I would live and die for this man, and vice versa. I remember I was at the cafeteria. And I was eating, and I saw my best friend walk in with some other people. And normally, you would think, oh, hey, buddy, what's going on? Come on over here. Yeah, I got some seats. But I didn't do that at all. I was like, oh, maybe he thinks I'm not his best. And like, we were juniors by this point. Well, maybe he thinks I'm not his best friend, or maybe he doesn't think of me that way. Yeah, I mean, otherwise, why would he be here without telling me? I don't want to interrupt him. Like, I don't want to, like, be that guy and then make him feel uncomfortable. So I'm just going to sit here alone. And I'm going to pretend that I didn't see him. Like, that occurred. Like, not only did that occur to me, that actually happened. So, trust me, if you do feel like this, for the most part, you're probably wrong. You're probably wrong. And I even told my best friend the next day, and he's like, are you stupid? What are you doing? Like, why would you think that, number one? And why didn't you just come over and say hi? Like, that's ridiculous. So, I don't know. I just...
Everyone
when
views
I, when
things,
I read this, that's what I thought of.
Yeah, everyone views things through their own lens, and it's hard if you don't have the context of everybody else. And thank goodness that the women come into this equation. Okay.
Thank goodness.
Hermione comes up,
yeah,
and she's just like, "Enough of this, Harry. Wake up."
Yeah.
Okay.
Is it something of Ron's? I don't want to say fault, but is it his duty to kind of be like, "Hey, let's sit down and talk here because you're clearly going through some things, and I get it, but what are we doing?" Is that more Ron's duty or is that more Hermione's duty?
I don't think it's anyone's job to have this conversation.
Okay.
I think that Ron and Harry have their own relationships, and neither Ron nor Harry, as we will see in subsequent books, are great about talking about their emotions with each other. They spend so much time with each other. Think about it. They room together. They have every class together. You know, they're on the Quidditch team together. Like, these guys are nonstop. So if Harry's going through something that he isn't yet ready to share with Ron, I think Ron and he have an understanding that you don't need to ask. Mm-hmm. And probably he'll tell Ron at some point.
Yeah.
But he did same thing. We're going to see as he continues to have cranky feelings and then Ron has cranky feelings. These boys don't communicate very well.
Fair.
Okay.
Fair.
So I'm saying like it's not Ron's job. It's nobody's job, honestly, except Harry's. It's your you can only control yourself. You can't make anyone in control or blame anybody for not doing something when that's not their job. But thankfully, Hermione, who knows these two boys, not an owl. You know, she knows that this is what it's like. So she has to be the one that breaks the ice, comes in, calls a spade a spade. But Hermione's been able to have these hard conversations. She even just straight up asked Harry, did you snog, you know, with Cho Chang? So... Hermione is the straight shooter, as is Ginny. So I'm really proud that she comes in, took the night bus, gives Harry a fun little inside scoop. Yeah, I'm not skiing. I hate it.
Yeah, right.
Please don't tell Ron.
Don't give him the satisfaction.
No. But I actually told my parents that anyone serious about their studies is going back to school and they bought it. Think about that. Her parents believe that people are going to take Christmas break. To go back to school and study when they're 15.
Oh my god! Yeah, sure. They want to go back and study, Ma. In the meantime, they're sitting back there drinking beers.
Oh my gosh! I would be so sad if my child was gone as of September 1st. Finally, comes home for Christmas break. I booked an expensive ski trip
at a chalet.
Probably new outfits. Got reservations at dining rooms. All this stuff. I just want to hear. All the stuff. Because remember, her parents are muggles.
Right, yeah.
So they're probably like, Hermione, when we're not skiing, you're telling us everything.
Everything.
Tell us more about flobber worms and blast-ended screws. And what do you mean your teacher is half giant? Like she oh my gosh.
No, literally draw it out for me.
Yes. How does that work? How?
I need a to scale diagram. Preferably a diorama.
And she left. That's probably what happened.
Hey, look at the time. Gotta go.
Mr. and Mrs. Granger probably were like, half giant? How does that work? And Hermione was like, yeah, I gotta go study. Awkward.
Oh, you know what, Mary? Before we continue, we should probably talk about our partners that help make this podcast possible, shall we?
We shall.
All right, let's do it.
All right, my friends, you've heard us talk about D&D Adventure Club, and we gotta tell you, if you haven't checked it out and you have someone in your life who enjoys fantasy, enjoys playing games, maybe they like acting and improv and have a creative bone in their body, maybe there's someone who loves kind of playing games where you get to work together as a team, or if you know someone who's ever shown interest in Dungeons & Dragons but then tried to look into it and was completely overwhelmed, you need to check out D&D Adventure Club.
Yeah, because if you go to D&D Adventure Club, you'll get an experience where D&D can be overwhelming. Trust me, I know, I get it. But these people make it easy for you and your child or you and your friends. If you're just getting into it, you want to go to D&D Adventure Club and use the checkout code MARY20, MARY20. We'll have the links and the checkout code here in the show notes as you're listening to this bad boy or as you're watching. So that is that D&D Adventure Club. All right, Marvin, we get a chance to go visit Arthur.
Yes.
At St. Mungo's.
We take the night bus.
Yeah, sure, fine. But really, what it comes down to... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Is this when they take the night bus or is this when they take the big car? Because it's Christmas. Hold on. I'm like, I've been listening to so many things that, so many chapters.
Well, now you got me questioning my sanity.
Sorry. Well, it's Christmas. First we get presents and Percy sent
his
present
back. Oh my goodness gracious.
Yes, but you know what? They take a car because it was too big and the underground doesn't run on Christmas.
Hold on though, Mary, I have a question.
What?
Proper protocol. On this bad boy.
On Christmas presents?
On Christmas presents. If you are that disgusted with your family.
Percy.
Yeah, if you are Percy level disgusted. Is it appropriate and is it fair? Is it right to send the presents back? Because I got an answer. But I want to hear yours.
Okay, because here's the scoop, Poops. His dad almost died. He's in the hospital. He doesn't send a note back. He doesn't check in on Arthur. Molly sends him his Christmas jumper, to which he sends back no note. No note?
You could have died.
Do I think that this is right? The answer is no. Percy is an excellent person to show us how, even though you think you're right, you may not always be. However,
okay, here's he kind of is right so far.
Here's the scoop.
Kind of is right.
How Percy feels about this situation is that strong. So wherever you are in the world right now, there are a lot of hot issues, whether it's the upcoming United States presidential election that's going to be coming up, whether it is the situation going on in Gaza, whether it is Russia and Ukraine, like whether it's like there's
the election.
Just, that's what I just said.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, that was the first no. Thing I said. Oh, no. I got it. Where is it?
I can't even find it.
I can't even, maybe, yeah, I can't find it in quotes. Here it is.
How to tell when the hosts aren't there listening.
There are real life situations that are so polarizing that if you feel strongly one way and you are adamant about it and you are vocal about it, and then you have family members who are the same, who are involved, who are like leading the charge, okay? Like have the lawn signs, have the t-shirts, go to the rallies, like are sometimes even up on the podium introducing people. Okay, they have that is the level of the Weasleys. It's not just like, yeah, we're supporters. No.
No, 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 no.
They're like running for VP.
That's
okay?
That's part of their identity now. That's
so
that's a thing.
If you can think of how you feel on one of these polarizing topics and picture your family being the complete opposite, but super strong about it, that's where Percy is. And I feel really bad for him because obviously we know he's on the wrong side. And this is heartbreaking because we love Molly Weasley. And we know the time that she puts into these little gifts. And we know Arthur just almost died. So we feel very badly. But if we didn't know all these details, and we just knew that they were fighting about, say, politics, for example. Mm-hmm. I could see this happening. I could see it.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's right, but I could see it.
It's pretty much happened to you, Mary.
Really?
Yeah.
I sent something back?
Oh, no. Oh, no, no, no. Not something back.
I do not send gifts back.
No,
I love gifts.
Yeah, I meant like the one person's on one side of the argument and you're on the other side of the argument.
Oh, that's been my whole life.
Yeah, and you have no problem.
That's been my whole life.
That's been my whole life.
Yes.
But as far as the gifting goes, Mary, yeah, I'm going to be pissed at you and I'm not going to say nothing, but I ain't sending the gift back. In fact, what I'm going to do something worse. I'm going to put it right in the trash.
Yeah. Put it in the trash. Burn it. Give it to a house elf. I don't know.
Yeah.
Do something with it, but don't mail it back. That's so mean to your mom.
Is that worse than putting it in the trash? Sending it back?
No, because she doesn't. Sending it back is worse. Sending it back is worse than putting it in the trash.
Oh, man.
Yeah. Percy.
It shows you what he's thinking. And again, that's a great way.
However... Here's the big however. You ready?
Big however. Huge.
We don't know what Molly put on this sweater, because that's what jumper means, a sweater.
Sure.
What if it was like, I'm Team Dumbledore?
Then he's kind of okay.
Yeah.
Then it's okay.
So we don't know. I mean, we do know because Molly wanted to do that, but he doesn't even check on his dad. Like, come on, man.
Oh, man.
You're going to have to see him. Think about that, too. Like, Arthur's going to go back to work at the ministry where Percy works.
Yes. All right. We should probably move through this chapter a little bit quicker, only because we need to go through the Ginny listener feedback.
Which we got.
Yep.
All right. Then we get to the closed ward.
Yep.
We get the stitches.
Oh, man. That's not great, Bob. But you know what? I got to say this, you know, just because.
The first time was in the night bus. That's where we
are. I just got to say this because he's probably my top three characters. Blimey, said Ron, staring at the man. Oh my goodness, said Hermione, and suddenly sounding breathless. Professor Lockhart? Their ex-defense against the dark arts teacher pushed open the doors and moved towards them, wearing a long lilac dressing gown.
Of course he would.
By the way, Hugh Grant was the original casting for Professor Lockhart. And if you want to know what Hugh Grant would have been like as Professor Lockhart, watch the movie, oddly enough, Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes.
He is perfection. And I totally understand why he was originally cast as Lockhart. Yet at the same time, Kenneth Branagh is just a miracle among miracles. Truly. as Lockhart. He goes, well, hello there, he said. I'd expect you'd like my autograph. Would you? Hasn't changed much, has he? Harry muttered to Ginny, who grinned. How are you, Professor? Said Ron, sounding slightly guilty. It had been Ron's malfunctioning wand that had damaged Professor Lockhart's memory so badly that he had landed in St. Mungo's in the first place. Though, as Lockhart had been attempting to permanently wipe Harry and Ron's memories at the time, Harry's sympathy was limited.
Yeah.
I'm very well indeed, thank you, said Lockhart.
You're dying.
Pulling a rather battered peacock feather quill from his pocket. Now, how many autographs would you like? I could do joined up writing one, you know. Oh man. And I love how they talk about, oh, you were a teacher. Oh, teach, did I? And then the smile reappeared on his face so suddenly it was rather alarming. Taught you everything you know, I expect, did I? Well, how about those autographs then? Shall we say around a dozen? You can give them all to your little friends. And then nobody will be left out. How about those autographs? Oh my goodness gracious.
So they get, because of Lockhart, they have the nurse thinks, the healer thinks that Lockhart, they are actually there to see him on Christmas. So she lets them into the Janus Thickney ward.
Yeah.
And that, of course, is where we find Neville, his grandmother, Neville's mom and dad, and Ron and Hermione and Ginny learn the truth about Neville and the understanding, of course, that Bellatrix Lestrange, the woman who Creature has a shrine to, is responsible for it. A little note about Creature. Hermione made something for Creature, and then they go to his bedroom, which is a dingy door in the opposite corner of the pantry where Harry had never seen open. They go inside, and it is most of the cupboard was taken up with very large old-fashioned boiler, the floor's space underneath the pipes. Creature had made himself something that looked like a nest of ragged rags and smelly old blankets, and then he had a picture of Bellatrix Lestrange and like a little shrine to her and everything.
Yeah. Full bodyguard.
This time it hit me because I was reading it. It's like this little cupboard. And I was like, oh my gosh, he's in a little cupboard. Just like Harry was in a little cupboard.
Yeah.
And then they don't find Creature. And Sirius is like, it's fine. He's probably just like hiding somewhere.
Yeah.
He can't run away. And that's when Hermione says, Harry says, they can leave the house if they really want to. Dobby did. He left the Malfoys to give me a warning 2 years ago. He had to punish himself afterwards, but he still managed it. Mm-hmm. Sirius looked slightly disconcerted for a moment. And then he says, I'll look for him later.
Right.
And this is such an important little breadcrumb.
Mm-hmm.
About Creature being able to go against wishes and keeping that fresh in our mind. Granted, it's not for two books later, but we need to know this, that house elves are capable of doing this.
And by the way, this is the second time in about two or three chapters that this has happened. Mm-hmm. Because if you remember, when Harry shows up 12 Grimmauld Place, Sirius calls later on, he calls for Creature, and Creature wasn't there. He never answered.
Yeah.
Remember when we were saying red flags should be going off right now, but they're not?
Mm-hmm.
That is foreshadowing for what's to come. Agreed. which is pretty great.
I know you want to get to the listener feedback, but I need to bring back to your favorite person. So yeah, we're in the ward. We get to meet Neville's parents. His mom gives him that sweet little bubblegum wrapper that he puts in his pocket.
Oh my
god. His grand says he has enough to wallpaper his room. Sweet little thing. And this is where Hermione realizes that Bellatrix did this. And here's the last two sentences of this chapter, Blake, just for you. There was a long silence, broken by Lockhart's angry voice. Look, I didn't learn joined up writing for nothing, you know.
Listen, the author is great at many a thing. But in this chapter, you're seeing it up front in your face. In a chapter like this, that is surrounded by tension and building up, the way that it is, of the foreshadowing and having Harry question his very existence, and then ending it with finally learning, like, to the extent that it is, what happened to Neville's parents, the entire trio learning of what it is, and then his mother handing him this gum wrapper. Which, by the way, makes me wonder how much she knows Neville is Neville, who he is, and how much she's trying to communicate with him.
Yeah.
You know, in the inside of her.
Yeah.
Being able to balance all of that with some levity is the key to writing, mm-hmm. right? Because you have to have a buildup of tension and a release. The only movie that I know of that just kept building and building and building and building with no release was the movie Dunkirk that Christopher Nolan made.
Where I didn't see it.
Which we should watch it. It just kept building and building and building, and it was just like, and that was the point of the film,
oh.
right? Because it, never mind, it was the evacuation of Dunkirk, World War II, the whole thing.
Okay.
That was the point. But in most works like this, you need
a
release.
They give you a breather.
Yeah, yes. you need to have that break a little. And Lockhart, in all of his glory, is the perfect example of that. Mm-hmm. So that's that.
Awesome sauce.
All right. You ready for... Oh, we got to do different perspective.
Oh, okay.
You ready for different perspective?
Sure.
All right, here we go. Let's do it.
Holy cricket. You're Harry Potter. I'm Hermione Granger. And you are...
I'm the healer.
Oh, hi.
Hi, Merry Christmas.
Happy Christmas to
happy,
you.
Happy Harry Potter Christmas. Yes.
Wow.
Harry Christmas. Yes. Hi.
It's very good to see you. I think you got your hands full. You got werewolves. You got Lockhart.
Oh, he's such a dear.
Oh, isn't he? Bless his heart.
Bless his sweetheart. You know, we're working so much on him and Mr. Bode. Mr. Bode even got a present today.
Oh.
I got to tell you, a lot of people like to take Christmas off, mm-hmm. but as someone who has such a jolly spirit, I did all the decorating.
Oh, you did?
All the orbs.
Oh, I love all the
beautiful
little snowflakes.
Silver trees. Yeah, that was me.
Oh, my goodness.
That was me. In case you can't
you're
tell,
like
I'm
Buddy.
Wearing... Yeah, yeah.
No wonder why you're wearing that nice little light green outfit.
Thank you. Yeah. And so just to see the spirit of merriment uh-huh. come to these people, it just fills my heart. And the best of all, Gilderoy Lockhart, mm-hmm. who's now been here for 3 years.
God
three
knows.
Years.
How did that happen?
He is so sweet.
Yeah.
So tender. Never had one visitor. Never one.
You would think that after all the things that he's done.
And then today, in come four wonderful teenagers who are just so kind. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure one was Harry Potter.
Oh my goodness.
I gotta say, he was like a little tired, looked yeah. like he hasn't gotten much sleep.
Sure.
But I'm pretty sure I saw
a little
scar.
Moody.
Yeah. Which, you know, I've
a
heard.
Teenager.
You know, exactly. But yeah, they came in. I've never seen Gilderoy Lockhart like light up so much. And then Bode had his little plant and he started to murmur things. So I gotta tell you, the Christmas spirit works miracles.
You know what I've heard? Mm. I've heard Potter was his student at one time.
Yeah.
He must have been so proud.
Oh my
of that.
Gosh, honestly.
How sweet is that little boy?
Oh, he's the sweetest.
Going to visit his old teacher.
End scene.
All right, you ready for some emails?
I am.
What we got here? All right, here we go.
Oh, Miles here.
All right, this one comes from Stephanie, Mary. She says, hello, hey, Mary Stephanie. And Blake. I started listening to your podcast a week before Christmas 2023, and I have now just caught up. I've loved everything about the podcast, from your animals trying to join and your sweet kiddos. Because of you guys, I've been able to look at things from a different perspective. Hey. Now, I'm not so sure Dumbledore is my favorite anymore, as a matter of fact. I do have a question, though, and I can't remember if you answered this or not, but if Harry had the trace on him and can't use underage magic, how do you explain the graveyard in book 4? Harry used underage magic. If he did, wouldn't the ministry have known of it? Oh, and by the way, I'm a Hufflepuff married to a Slytherin. So I laugh a lot because of the way you guys talk in the podcast. It reminds me so much of my husband and I.
Aww.
So, yeah, it's a privilege to be married to a Slytherin. I'm just going to say that. It's a privilege.
Yeah.
All right. So, Marvin, the underage magic and the ministry knowing that he had used it in the trace in the graveyard. Thoughts?
Yeah, I already know.
Okay. Well, what is it?
Okay. So, the graveyard was the graveyard of the Riddle family. And of course, they were able to utilize, like, Voldemort was already there and there were some magical things. The trace really is happening a lot, like, when you're in a Muggle area.
Okay.
And so Voldemort had already been there and he probably put, like, an anti-trace thing. But I think it's like when you're in a magical dwelling or somewhere where there's already been adult magical people, it doesn't count. It's just if you're like in Muggle households.
Okay.
And to me, that wasn't a Muggle household, that probably Tom Riddle Jr., little Tommy, would show on up there. And I don't know if graveyards in general can have a trace on them, but I feel like if there's magical people or magical family members, then it's even turned off.
I feel like graveyards is one of those places that probably like has a lot of magic around it to begin with.
Yeah.
So like it's just one of the highway version of magical things happening.
Because like we don't see the trace happening in the Burrow, for example. If you're in a magical household, it's not going to be going off.
Right.
But
so,
if it's a designated.
I mean, what it comes down to is, you know, hashtag magic. Like, there, I'm sure that there is an explanation, and it more than likely revolves around hashtag magic.
Yeah.
So, all right. This one comes from R.
Hi, so, R.
It says, hi, Mary and Blake.
Is it R like a pirate or just the letter R?
It's neither. It's Renee.
Hi, Renee.
Renee from Tokyo.
Hi, Renee.
I'm a longtime listener of the Outlander Cast podcast. Oh, where's my Outlander button?
I don't know, Blake.
Oh, you see, off. I changed my whole thing here, and I'm having a hard time.
It's okay.
Never mind. It's fine.
Je suis prêt.
You know, I'm going to look it
but
up.
But you are not. You are not ready. It's okay, nope. Blake.
Okay, fine. Anyway.
Renee in Tokyo.
There we go. Got it. All right. She says, I found and fell in love with The Last Kingdom through you guys.
Oh.
And finally started reading the Harry Potter series to finally understand these Harry Potter references that sneak into your other shows.
Sorry.
All these professors I had no idea about, which House Uhtred and Alfred would be sorted into. And, well, Hagrid just sounded like a lovely character.
He is.
Anyway, since last summer, I've plowed through the whole series, caught up with all of your episodes, and discovered that I'm a Ravenpuff.
Ooh.
Married to...
Dun, 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 dun.
A Slytherin.
Wow.
Again, it's a privilege being married to a Slytherin. Oh, I recently got the new Mina Lima versions to start reading to my kids, who are enjoying it thoroughly. Even took my oldest two to the making of the Harry Potter Museum in Tokyo, which was an amazing experience. We're total nerds now, and thanks to you all. I have a question, though, as I've read through this series.
Yes.
If Harry's invisibility cloak was a Deathly Hallow, which provided the wearer with complete invisibility,
yes.
How come Mad-Eye was able to see through it in the Goblet of Fire? To me, this seems like a major plot hole, but maybe I'm missing something. Just a funny note, when Lupin was trying to comfort Harry and Prisoner of Azkaban when he was trying to produce the Patronus, I love that he says, this is ridiculously advanced magic, when ridiculous is the charm against boggarts who are masquerading as the Dementors. Well, thanks for doing what you do, making us smile and snort with laughter and bringing Lumos with every episode. Marvin, thoughts on
the invisibility cloak?
Invisibility cloak.
Maybe it's the Nurgles. Okay, no, I'm joking. But in my opinion, I'm going to double check, as I do think that there is something from the author about this. But I think while Dumbledore had the cloak, he was able to do testing kind of with it, because he's able to notice Harry when he's under the invisibility cloak. Mm-hmm. And Mad-Eye and Dumbledore were close, so I would not be surprised if Dumbledore also said, hey, you want to take a look at this cloak? Let's see what we can do if anyone else has something like this. Because sure. At that point, he wasn't 100% certain it was the Deathly Hallow. So I can see Dumbledore and Mad-Eye Moody doing some little experiments with that cloak in their time. But I will find out.
And Renee, on behalf of all Slytherins, I just want to say, you're welcome.
Oh my God.
All right, this one comes from Caitlin. She says, I hope you and your family had a lovely Christmas and that your new year will be filled with wonderful things.
Aww.
I've been following the Potterverse since it first started during Droughtlander, and is actually the reason why I'm now reading the Harry Potter books, as I've never read them before.
Yay.
I'd only watch the movies. I wanted to share with you a funny story. I was listening to your podcast episode for chapter 15 and got to the part where emails are read. And as you were reading one from a listener named Sophia, my daughter, also named Sophia, she is 4, came into the room and was so excited that she heard her name.
Aww.
When Mary asked what house listener Sophia was, my daughter was very confused and said, I'm right here in this house. Oh, that's great. That is great. I do have a question for Blake, though. Would rather have detention with Umbridge or dinner with Justin Finch Fletchley? Love the podcast, and I'm so excited for more Potter, Outlander, and Bridgerton content to come. Sincerely, Caitlin, a Ravenclaw.
I know what you're going to say, too.
It's JFF. You want to know why? So I could just tool on the kid to his face the entire time.
I'm shocked.
Why?
Because I thought that you would have detention with Dolores, because automatically as a Slytherin, she'd put you into the Inquisitor squad
and she'd probably give you sweeties. That's a good one, too.
You'd probably be like, Malfoy's my best friend. She'd be like, oh, honey, I don't know why you're in detention here. Yeah, let's go eat cake.
Come with you.
Want some more cookies?
Yeah, you know what? I'm officially retracting my JFF take. I'm officially moving on to... to detention with Dolores. That way I could just get out of it and have some cake.
And then you'd probably like laugh with her. Guess who I was supposed to have dinner with tonight?
That tool bag. Oh, that power tool, stop. JFF.
Hi, Sophia. I wanted to say a little hello.
Yes. This one comes from Mara. She says,
Hi,
Mary Blake. Happy New Year. This is an appreciation email letting you know that all your hard work really means a lot to your listeners.
Aww.
While listening to your podcast this morning, I was reminded again just why I love Mary and Blake Media so much. You aren't afraid to disagree with each other, and you stand your ground in a respectful way. Side-eye to Blake for his Slytherin-y criticism of the Hufflepuffs, which was fortunately absent in this episode that I was listening to. I loved your different takes on the merits of both book and film for this particular chapter, and I could really appreciate Blake's assertion that Neville finding the Room of Requirement was better than Dobby telling Harry about it. Part of me agrees, but the different perspective nailed it for me. Even better, you were able to follow your own commandment and bookend the show with your analysis. More particularly, I loved hearing Blake's take on the connection between Harry and Voldemort, comparing it to the one between Rey and Kylo Ren in the Star Wars films. As a lifelong Star Wars nerd, this warmed my heart to have that beloved universe brought into this conversation. I spent part of the day thinking about the implications of the Horcrux living in Harry at this point in the series, something I haven't thought about in a long time.
Ooh, Maya.
This is why I listen to you. You combine the things that I love in a way that make me love them even more. And listening to you is like spending time with my friends who know me best, or who just know what references will work for me and aren't afraid to let their nerd flags fly.
Aww.
While I am a nerd clan member, I'm not a member at the level to get Blake's drawing of Hogwarts and Claire Fraser. I was so glad to learn of his existence. Again, combining my passions into a new work of art, it is another example of how you are my people, and I love you for it. Well, you know what, Mara? You send me your address.
Email us, Miriam.
Email
Blake
it, and I will make sure I'll get it to you. I'll get that drawing to you since you're
Where's
amazing.
Mara from?
New Jersey.
Oh my gosh. Everything she said, you would have thought it was our Mara from Massachusetts. She's a Star Wars fan, too.
Side note for Mary.
Yes.
Dobby's circulation problem sounds like Raynaud's phenomenon, an autoimmune disorder.
The very poor circulation, sir.
Might be.
If so, wool gloves and socks are a necessity for the poor little house elf, and Hermione is doing him such a favor. I have developed Raynaud's over the years and was experiencing it while I walked and listened to your podcast.
Aww.
It was perfect timing and made me laugh so hard that I scared the dogs passing me by at that moment. Also, for the past few years, I've been walking an hour early in the a.m., like 6:15 during the week, which is so against my not a morning person nature. It was hard habit to develop, but it has completely eliminated my seasonal affective disorder. It has totally changed my life.
I need to try it.
P.S. Can you have Reese create a promo of some kind explaining why kids should watch Percy Jackson and listen to his podcast? I know my daughter would love both, but she is being stubborn and doesn't want to watch because I suggested it. She's an 11-year-old, fifth grade Potterhead who is too smart to listen to her mother. I'm sure she'd listen to him.
I think you can listen to the first episode of the Percy Jackson Prophecy, and we talk about it a bit before we go into the show analysis.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So if you want to check that out, the Percy Jackson Prophecy with Mary and Reese instead of Mary and Blake.
So that is it for now. We have since I updated this a few weeks ago, gotten way more. Mm-hmm. But given that fact that we're already in an hour right now, let's shut
this bad boy
down.
I do want to read one iTunes review.
Oh, you just Apple dated Podcasts. Yourself. Oh, man, you dated yourself.
Apple Podcast review. Do you like that I stop? Because I know yeah, I'm about
you know to
say something wrong.
But you still
and then
do
I'm
it
like,
anyway.
No, that's the new one, Mary. No, it's not. The Apple Podcast. So, friends, if you enjoy the show, if we bring you Lumos in Your Time of Knox, not only is sharing caring, but writing us a written review in Apple Podcasts.
Yes.
Even if you listen on YouTube or
whatever,
wherever, going to Apple Podcasts and leaving a written review is one of the best ways for people to find our podcast.
Well, not to find it, but just to help them give them more context about the podcast and if other people like it.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
I found one that made me chuckle.
Okay.
It's by someone who's titled Oakwood Guy.
Oakwood Guy. Okay.
And he wrote Enchanting for the title.
Oh, okay.
And here is what Oakwood Guy, who gave us 5 stars.
All right. Fair
wrote,
enough.
Mary and her soundboard operator review Harry Potter. Period.
Well, you know what from the soundboard operator, thanks Oakwood Guy. It's all I'm good for, playing outstanding every once in a while.
He's probably a Hufflepuff.
He probably is.
And he's like, I'm all set. I'm not even going to dignify
your name. Guy's favorite
character
is Justin Finch Fletchley.
Oh my gosh, no. There you go, Blake.
Oh, man. You know what, Oakwood Guy?
You're basic.
No. He's saying you're basic.
No,
Blake.
I'm not basic.
You don't even get a name. You're so basic you forgot your name.
Just totally forgot the fact that my name's on the billing,
what
if
else?
You will.
Mine's first.
That's true. Mr. Mary Larson over here. I'm the bag carrier.
All right, let's All right. wrap it up.
Let's go. Here we go. I can't do that. I can't do it. Here we go.
Thank you so much for tuning in to this recent episode of the Potterverse. We appreciate you. If you want to send us an email, you can maryandblakemedia@gmail.com. If you would like your voice to be on the podcast, you can actually go to maryandblake.com, click the upper right-hand corner where it says contact us, and you can actually leave a voicemail.
Yep.
Super simply. It's about 90 seconds long, so make sure you, in the beginning, say your first name and where you're from, but then go at it. Because we love to hear your voices on this podcast.
It's my favorite part of podcasting, having other people's voices on here. Because your voice is just as important, if not more.
Otherwise,
than
it would just be Blake and I having these conversations at our dining room table,
laughing about about Lockhart.
Yes.
In the
in his autograph.
In his autograph.
An even dozen.
How about a dozen? All your little friends can feel included.
Oh my God. On that note, my name's Mary.
My name is Blake.
Mischief landed.
Free of charge.
Yes.